I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
You can't handle the truth.
Relax.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now.
Go.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomato Jimmy on the board. S&P futures down 11. NASDAQ futures down 164. That oil up 2 cents. 10-year rate up 3 basis points, 4.57. Do we have Professor Lou? Lou, are you there? Unmute thyself. I don't hear Mr. Lou. Anyway, the Chicago is fine this morning, as long as you don't try and breathe. There's so much smoke from the Canadian wildfires, you can barely see the buildings down the road, much less breathe.
Those doggone Canadians.
I know. You guys are having fires too, right?
Oh yeah, we've been having fires for the last 2 months, and it's getting the air quality is getting better. What's happening is the El Nino monsoon is starting to kick in, so that moisture is moving into the western part of the state. Most of the fires are in our western area, and on the what they call the western slope, and it's pretty bad out there. I mean, it's burned a lot of area. I know it's taken down a couple hundred structures, you know, houses and stuff like that. So we're you know, you get up in the morning and kind of look, see if the sky is, you know, how hazy the sky is, and that'll sort of tells you what we've got. But our air quality was horrific for a while. So you guys are getting it now, apparently.
Yeah, I pull out on Clybourne, and it's a straight view right downtown, essentially. You're looking right at the Hancock Center from, you know, 2.5 miles away. I'm like, God, there used to be a building there. I could see somewhat of a shadow, but you could tell just breathing. I mean, it's bad. It's and we're not going to get any rain. Maybe till Friday or Saturday. We haven't had it all week.
We're mid-90s to upper 90s every day here, and there have been some thunderstorms that have moved sort of intermittently across the state that are providing mostly, unfortunately, wind. But we are supposed to start getting some rain this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you. Would you and I pass the new DOD testosterone test? Did you see this story?
No, but I've been kind of following it for a long time. But fill everybody in on it.
SecDef, you know, Hegseth, who is a kind of a tough guy on physical fitness. He's hard on fitness standards, which is great. Apparently, they're going to introduce mandatory testosterone testing for service members as part of their annual physical, and they're going to make testosterone treatment available, although they're not going to make it mandatory. And so I'm kind of fascinated by this. We've talked for a long time about, you know, biological enhancements to our fighting force, you know, in some form, whether it's, you know, we do this already in the form of mandatory vaccinations for the military for a whole bunch of things. And mandatory, you know, mandatory medical exams, and in some cases mandatory treatment. But this is kind of an expansion of that. But it sounds like
the blatherings of a madman to me.
Why?
I mean, first of all, I think from what I've been reading, everybody in this generation, for some reason, their testosterone is lower than it used to be. I mean, everybody's allegedly, your grandfather's sperm count was a lot higher than yours or mine. And nobody seems to know if it's what it is. It's plastics or something. It just is. I mean, I don't know why. I think it's probably not a good thing to have, but what happens if somebody's testosterone is low. You're going to take. I'm not so sure that it doesn't cause other problems.
Well, they're not. This, as of right now, they're just testing. So the question is, are they going to try to enforce some kind of mandatory testosterone treatment? I don't think that's going to happen because that's an FDA issue. And there's some, as you are probably aware, there is some discussion about whether testosterone treatment just for a low T kind of thing is effective. So FDA's only licensed testosterone therapy for a very specific condition that is fairly rare.
Didn't Reagan and Kirk Douglas and all those old movie stars do? Didn't they all take human growth hormone treatments?
I don't know.
I think they did.
I don't know if they did specifically, but HGH is a thing. It was a huge. This kind of thing is huge among certain Silicon Valley people.
It started out being big with all those old Hollywood actors.
It very well could have been. This is
Kirk Douglas made it to like 102, didn't he? Pretty good shape. Yeah, maybe it worked.
It's a pretty good endorsement.
Yeah.
So you know, modifying your fighting force, modifying the biology of your fighting force is something that we know, for example, the Russians, the Soviets, and I think the Chinese were looking at very seriously, which means we were looking at it seriously at some point. I think when I read about it, I thought, huh, what an interesting thing to test for. And I'm wondering, you know, if we're going to start testing it for other conditions that may or may not be recognized as illnesses, but
well, it's going to leave the women out.
Yeah, because you can't you wreck all kinds of things if you start trying to treat low T in women with testosterone. But I mean, it's really not aimed at women. This is a particular condition for men. So fine, they'll run the testing. I just think it's interesting. I was looking at it and thinking, are we on the path to begin to assess biological upgrades? There's a famous science fiction book called The Forever War, in which a draft. It was written during Vietnam. It's an absolutely brilliant work by an author named Joe Haldeman. But in this novel, in the future, the military only drafts the very best, the brightest, you know, the quickest, the intellectually adept, the physically fit. They're very careful about it. They cull through the population to do this.
Didn't the Spartans used to do that? This isn't exactly new.
I don't know about the Spartans actually drafting for it. I know that the Spartans, you know, practiced infanticide if they had babies that they thought were deformed or weak or,
well, if you, you know, the training, if you couldn't go through the, by definition, if you could go through the training, you were one of the top in a gene pool. But you just do it that way. I mean, you don't have to pick the right babies to become a Navy SEAL. When one of 10 becomes a SEAL, and one of 10 of those gets to be in SEAL Team 6 or whatever it is, I mean, you just do it by selection.
You could, but you don't want to waste, if you're doing that kind of training, you don't want to waste time on having to weed out the people who are going to flunk out anyway. So you, if you start at the top and draft for the top, select just the top, you have a much higher retention rate number or a success rate with the people you're training. So you're not wasting training dollars culling out the ineffective.
As my 91-year-old cousin now played halfback for your place, University of Colorado, said, you know, if you're not all city, and if you're not all state, and if you're not all American, because it's pretty obvious who's moving up the chain at some point.
Oh yeah, it is.
I mean, you don't have to drain the guy's nuts when he comes to the NFL to find out if he's got enough testosterone. What do you care at that point if he can run?
Well, and that's another interesting aspect of this. So we, the military and the Air Force is notoriously bad at this. The military does physical fitness tests every year. you had to pass a fitness test. At the academy, it was this awful 15 to 20 minute test that started with us pull-ups. You did as many pull-ups as you could do. Then you know the whistle blew after, I think it's 2 minutes. Then you stepped to a standing broad jump test, which measured your leg strength and explosive power. You did your standing broad jump. Then you went to the push-up station. Then you went to a sit-up station. And the last test was a 600-yard run. So if you could get, and you know, the minimums were, I think the minimums were 40 push-ups and the 60 sit-ups, and you had 2 minutes to do this. And then you would get maybe a minute recovery time, and then you would move to the next station. By the time you did the 600-yard run, because you'd done push-ups and sit-ups, your core was basically, you know, pretty tired, and then you would have to run 600 yards, and it wasn't, the timing was, it was not a jog, okay? You had to pretty much almost sprint that 600-yard portion of it. And
that's a little more, a quarter is 440, so it's like a quarter and a little more.
Quarter and a half, yeah, a lap and a half. And I think you had a minute 40, maybe 2 minutes to do that, and then that was the minimum. The idea, and we had height and weight standards, but the idea was that if you could get through that test, which was rigorous and demanding, and measured not just your upper body and lower body strength, but cardio as well. The idea was if you get through that test, we really didn't care what you looked like. You could, you might be a little chunky and a little heavy, but getting through that test and being able to pass that test pretty much mandated that you were going to be functional at any task you were asked to do as a service member. And so I always thought that was the way to approach it. We don't really care. I mean, unless you're like morbidly obese and you can still do this stuff. We really don't care what you look like if you can do this, perform these basic fitness functions. So, you know, now we're stepping into measuring, you know, some other marker of fitness. I think it's really interesting that
I'm no phys ed PhD, and I'm not so sure that a testosterone marker is all that. I mean, if somebody's a little low, it doesn't mean he can't be in shape, or if he's a little high, it doesn't mean he's in shape either.
Right, exactly, and that's part of my point, which is, and the Army, Navy, Marine Corps have some very functional fitness tests that measure exactly what you or exactly the kind of strength that you would need in a combat situation, and those tests are drawn from Gulf War and War on Terror. You know, being in small units, having to fight for an extended period of time, having to drag people. Part of the Army fitness test is dragging.
Well, all you got to do is watch combat, for God's sake.
Oh, no, part of the Army test is dragging a 150-pound dummy, I think, 50 yards or something like that, at the end of having done a bunch of other.
What's they do? That's kind of what they do with the fire department guys here.
Something very, very much like that. And so, this kind of function testing is already out there. I think I'm sort of curious as to exactly what the rationale in this thing is. As I said, it's very interesting. Are we looking at, because you know as well as I do, once you measure it, your next step is the only reason you have to measure it is because you want to see if you can fix something, and I'm reasonably certain that at some point they're making testosterone low T treatments available if people want to take them. But you know, at some point,
are we sure they
everything that becomes that initiates as voluntary can ultimately become mandatory?
Are we sure that testosterone treatments work?
Well, when you say "are we,"
I mean, if you give yourself a shot in the butt every day of testosterone, does that mean It works. I mean,
you can get, yes. There are, from an anecdotal perspective, there are thousands of reports of people getting, you know, men getting these shots or taking the pills, and their muscle mass goes up, their mental performance improves. These are guys in their 40s and 50s for the most part. Their mental performance improves.
I've never heard of somebody needing them when they were 22 and in the Army. I mean, usually... It's just kind of odd.
It is odd. I'm just wondering, you know, somewhere, somebody looked at this issue and said, you know, there may be a physical performance issue and a mental performance issue with our people and the demands that we are placing on them. And so how do we improve that? Well, testosterone is, I mean, one of the ways we improve it right now is we give them drugs. If you're flying a jet fighter across the ocean in a single seat, you know, with a 7 or 8 hour time in the seat, to make sure you're not falling asleep or that you're mentally awake, you're given, you know, some kind of Benzedrine analog that you can take if you need to.
These calm uppers, greenies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you're prescribed those to make sure you stay mentally awake.
You can't
take
all that coffee because you're in the seat.
That's right. Although they do have.
I know, like, you know, the Greyhound bus drivers. I get it.
System for that. So anyway, we do it with drugs right now. Are we looking to provide another option on that? And we don't know. You know, you say, well, I've never heard of somebody with low T at, you know, at 30. I mean, they're guys.
I'm sure there are, but I mean, I don't know of anybody. I'd be doubtful if somebody in tip top shape. You know, probably. I don't know about T, but my buddy Dr. J, when his dad was chief of surgery in Minnesota, and they did a lot of research on roids, and John and Pete stayed away from them because the old man was like, you're not taking those things. Although there are some roids you could take that probably under a doctor's care, we actually maybe could help a little bit, but there were guys that were taking T back then with roids. It makes you a boatload meaner. I mean, it doesn't make you stronger. You get meaner.
Well, those particular kinds of drugs, yeah, and they had all kinds of pernicious side effects. They shrank certain private body parts.
Well, yeah, you needed more T because yours stopped.
And they created larger muscles. They allowed you to train longer.
Larger muscles, but smaller balls, basically. You had peas instead of balls.
Yeah, well, they were brittle and prone to catastrophic injury. My father had several players whose NFL careers ended with, you know, biceps ripping off the bone, you know, tearing tendons off the bone, or muscle, these horrific muscle tears as a result of the muscles growing in an uncontrolled way. So, yeah, the question... Somebody thought of something at DOD and said, do we have an issue with this? And the answer apparently was, we have absolutely no idea because we don't test for it. Okay, how much does a test cost? Well, it costs, you know, 50 cents. Okay, throw that in on top of the physical exam, and let's see what we've got. This doesn't sound any more ridiculous than some of the other things that we do. And as I said, at this point, it's a test. We're not mandating, you know.
We got people thinking up therapy. We got people thinking up the weirdest stuff. Now we're going to go to daylight savings time all the time.
So that was another thing I wanted to mention. We, you know, you and I are old enough to remember when we tried this back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Remember when our first fuel crisis and gas oil crisis, and the idea was that we would switch to daylight savings time because we wouldn't need to burn as much petroleum to heat and power buildings because our workday would correspond more closely to to actual daylight. The problem was, and people started screaming pretty quickly once it got later into the year, because the sunrise up in Chicago and up in Minneapolis on daylight savings time is after 8:30 in the morning.
Chicago's 8:02, Minneapolis like 8:30.
Yeah. So you're going to run into an issue.
All your kids are waiting for the bus and everything in the morning in the dark.
In pitch black.
Black. Nobody wants
in
that.
In dark. Yeah, I thought when I heard this, I went, come on, you guys can't get an effective vote. Well, I guess they did have one on war powers, but or voter fraud, but you can do this. And again, this was I thought this thing had been resolved. If they were going to go to a time, it was going to be standard time, not daylight time.
How difficult is it, especially the world of cell phones? What do I have to, change the clock in my truck and maybe one in the stove? I mean, how tough is this?
It's not the physical act of changing the clock. I mean, don't get me wrong. I will be perfectly happy not to lose an hour of sleep in the spring. There are fairly significant society-wide effects from changing the clock and changing the time. Is your circadian rhythm has to adapt to it. There are more deaths, there are more suicides, there are more behavior problems as people adjust to that loss of an hour of sleep.
There's a reason to do it.
I think maybe a good reason to do it. And part of it may be, Tom, that we've got an older population that just doesn't do well on this. My ability to deal with time zone changes is much less at my age than it was when I was flying across the pond.
It takes me a couple of days when we change the clock. I never had a problem with it.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of people who do.
If you were going to do it, if you had a brain cell working, like I wonder if these people do, you'd split it in half. because they both have their problem. And if you went to all standard time and no daylight savings time, virtually every recreational activity in every park in the country would have to have lights then, which you wouldn't want, because you don't want people to stop. I mean, it ruins your entire summer, basically, if you went to standard time all the time.
Well, and
I mean, there's a reason to do it. And I think
do you
the
remember
reason...
Why we, do you remember why it happened originally? Do you remember when it
somehow
first,
or other somebody
was
calculated...
Adopted?
Actually, I don't know the original reason.
World War One production. They wanted to be able to keep people working, later into the day, in the summertime, before it got dark.
Okay.
And so it was a function, as I understand it, of World War One military production, and we ramped up this daylight savings time idea to make people more productive in the summer, because it would stay daylight longer.
So it's always going to be now it's going to be 5 hours to Europe instead of. I mean, this doesn't seem like it's very well thought through. During the energy crisis, it had to do with some idiot somewhere calculated that you used more energy in the afternoon when it was dark than in the morning or something, right?
Yeah, it was something like that where we just said we're gonna keep it this way so that people don't have to turn their lights on.
I think they're gonna do it for 2 years and they're gonna say to hell with it because Christmas time, or the idea. What about a knucklehead like me? I get up in the morning at five anyway for the show or before that. So if I get up at 4:30 on a Saturday, I gotta wait around 3.5 hours for the sun to come up. That's kind of a long time.
I'm with you. There's an aphorism on Facebook or Twitter. Every time we do this, it's credited to some Native American chief, but it says it goes something like this: only the white man could take a blanket, cut 12 inches off one end of it, so 12 inches, that 12 inches onto the other end, and then claim it's a longer blanket.
So I bet now that your guy is going to go on the dollar coin. What are we doing with Susan B. Anthony?
Who?
She's on the dollar coin now that nobody ever uses.
I know.
Are we dumping her?
I guess that relationship has run its course, right? Time to dump her.
Okay.
I don't.
You know,
I don't,
neither Hitler or Mussolini had their face on currency or coins. Stalin did, by the way.
Stalin did, that's right. Yeah.
Actually, they put him, he was on, his face was on, like, not so much Russian currency, but like Czechoslovakian currency.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he was throughout the Iron Curtain, which reminds me of an old Soviet joke. Old woman is riding on a bus. There are all these passengers on there with her, including this soldier who's standing next to her. And as she's riding, she's holding her groceries from her shopping trip, and they hit a bump, and she drops her bag of groceries. And she goes, oh, no, because there are eggs in there. And she paws into the bag and opens up the carton, and all the eggs are okay. And she goes, thank God. And the soldier hears her, and he taps her on the shoulder, and he says, grandmother, in the Soviet Union, all good things come from Stalin, Comrade Stalin. And so when something good happens like this, you have to say, thank Stalin. Okay, that's the way this works. And the old woman looks at him and goes, thank you, Comrade Soldier. I appreciate that. I really didn't understand. And then she turns away, and they ride a little further, and then she turns back to the soldier, and she goes, but Comrade Soldier, what happens when Comrade Stalin dies? And the soldier thinks for a second, and he goes, then you can say thank God.
Well, so the
Soviet humor.
Did you, are you into the group that is convinced he was killed by rat poison?
It would be consistent. It would be consistent with, you know, the machinations that were going on in the Soviet leadership at that point. I think there's a very good case that somebody took him out, because what was about to happen was a pogrom directed against the Jews in the Soviet Union. He was manifesting this raging paranoia episode about Jews coming after him, and of course many of his doctors were Jewish, and a lot of the old Bolshevik revolutionaries had been Jewish, and he was thinking, you know, this is they're going to be, we have to eliminate them because they're going to be coming for revenge, and this was starting to gear up, and the thought process was that somebody in his inner circle said, we can't go through this again. You know, the country won't survive, and so they poisoned him, but who knows? You know, if it wasn't poison, it was an act of something else.
Well, that's pretty effective. It's pretty effective. It's tasteless.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the question is, what were there? You know, was there an autopsy? I've never seen any report.
Well, he bled out of something. Something was a hemorrhage of some kind.
Yeah, some kind of hemorrhage. It could have been an assassination. It there certainly was good reason to.
Well, he drank a whole bunch of wine, so throwing some stuff in there wouldn't have been that hard.
That's right. That's right. And I don't know if you ever seen the movie The Death of Stalin?
No.
It is an absolutely brilliant black comedy. It's historically reasonably close. But it's got all these British actors who play the various Russian leaders, you know, Beria and Malenkov and Khrushchev and the rest of them, and it's fascinating. The panic, the running around with their hair on fire, the murder of Beria, the secret police head, really a great movie, and certainly worth your while if you're bored. So you and the lady are bored some night.
What's your view on the on this speech tonight? A lot of people are pretty concerned.
I don't know. You know, it got leaked late yesterday that supposedly the CIA was aware of some massive Chinese election interference in 2016, and that they kept that information from Trump in his first term, which, you know, hello deep state, you know, so that got leaked, that got pitched out yesterday as perhaps a subject of the speech. My personal opinion is that whatever the planned subject of the speech is, it will track off into whatever other things are on the president's mind. I think he's got to talk about Iran. I think he's got to basically say, look, we tried this, we tried the MOU, we tried to corral this thing. We didn't want a worldwide economic collapse. It didn't work. The Iranians will not play ball. They continue to negotiate in bad faith. We are going to either bring them to the negotiating table with some kind of marker of commitment, or we're just going to basically take their economy down to a point where we're not going to have to worry about them.
I'm going to say, Lou, that virtually everybody is convinced we started it. The thing was open before we got there. What's he doing? This is all feeding his own ego.
The thing was not open.
Oh.
We were paying ransom. The West was paying ransom to keep the straits open, and it's been that way for 25 or 30 years at least.
It's all perception, Lou. I mean, the fact is, right now, the idea of taking the head of the place out, who was an 80-some-year-old guy, with this idea that you're going to get this other group. Now we don't even know who the hell is there. That was a horrible idea, Lou.
I don't think so. I think it's a great idea. It's introduced tremendous confusion and poor response by the Iranian leadership. It's, as far as we can tell, forced a kind of civil war within the Iranian government right now. And irrespective of that, you know, we've been at war. We have suffered. The international community has suffered acts of piracy and war sponsored by this country for decades. We tolerated it. That was the ransom we were paying to keep
that. We've done the same thing with China and Russia.
I'm sorry?
I mean, this idea that every time there's a bad person in the world, we have to go somewhat pound the hell out of them. That's just not...
I'm not... This is... I think we have solid foreign policy justifications. It's foreign policy goals for doing what we did. I'm fine with the actual decision. The execution... problematic, but mainly because we have it, the president and his people have not effectively, in my mind, communicated a rationale. We have multiple rationales for doing it. There is a very straightforward reason for doing it, but I shouldn't have to guess at it.
Well, I would agree with that.
We haven't communicated that effectively, and I think if you're gonna commit these kinds of resources to something like this, You have to make a better explanation and sales pitch than the president has done so far.
Well, in terms of 6 months, being able to do something for 6 months, what is this now, the third 6 months, the third war, or what?
Well, we haven't been there. What did we just cross 6 months, right? Or we're not quite at 6 months.
I thought something was 90 days, and then they said it was the second war.
That's the war powers, yeah. Okay, so those votes have been taken. And the clock, every time we have a halt, the clock resets. That's the position of this administration.
Which is insane, by the way.
Fine. It's insane. The precedent, he didn't establish the precedent. Reagan established the precedent. Clinton followed it. Obama followed it. Bush followed it. Biden followed it. So... that's the interpretation that the executive branch has taken on it. And by the way, the executive branch, no president has acknowledged that law is constitutional. So irrespective of that, I think is a solid foreign policy justification for what we're doing. I understand that. Is he going to give that justification tonight? I don't know.
I think he's going to try and stop the election.
How's he going to do that?
I've got all kinds of stuff yesterday, and not from crazy people on the left, who are just as crazy as some of the people on the right. He's going to try and declare the two Senate races in Georgia not legitimate. Evidently,
one angle.
Okay, but he's going to there's going to be all this stuff about
at least one of those senators has gone through an election, and the other guy's getting elected this fall, is up for election this fall.
Right.
So that problem takes care of itself.
There's some people are kind of afraid of tonight. I'm just saying. I hope that they're wrong, and it is. I'm hoping it's an explanation of the war. The only, I still go back to this. Iran has been a bad actor for a long time. I really thought that the world had them pretty much stymied at every front, and they were probably in the worst shape they were in. I don't know why the timing to me was a little weird. And plus, I mean, you can't on one hand say we got to open up the strait, and the next minute say we don't need the oil because we got our own oil here, so we don't even really care. Everybody else should be doing it, but we keep doing it. I mean, the back and forth logic is stifling to me.
Well, and that's what I mean in terms of explanation. We have a strategy. I have friends of mine who say, we didn't anticipate they were going to close the Straits of Hormuz, and I'm going, that's the first thing we would have anticipated, and it's why we've tried the carrot stick approach, on again, off again, and I think fundamentally this president is a deal maker, and wants a deal. I mean, he announced yesterday that the Iranians have apparently extended an offer to try to go back to the negotiating table. Now, I have absolutely no idea why you would, although unless he's being advised this, why you would think that's a legitimate offer by these guys. But
why would you? I have to ask, well, at this point, why would you believe one word the man says?
I mean, because he seems to follow up on things that he says he's going to do.
Oh, that part, I'm sort of with you, but I mean, everything.
When he says they've come back to us to try to negotiate, I think that's probably happened.
I just think, in my experience, and again, it's just a narrow dude from a guy from the South Side. When you come across people. There's somebody, and I would probably put you in this category, although you are an attorney, I put you in this category that the only time you would tell a lie is if you walked in and your mother's on her deathbed and she said, how was your day? Even if it wasn't, you might say, it was pretty good, but I'm worried about you.
You don't have to go that far. Do these jeans make me look fat?
Well, yeah, okay. Hello. But then there's other people, every single word out of their mouth is something that's of convenience, and I know a few people like that, and it's really hard to listen to them.
We've elected a bunch of those people as president, not just this one.
But I mean, last week the guy's talking about where he gets these. Why he even has to go down this road, I have no idea. If it's some kind of mental problem, he started talking about 38,000 Americans died in his speech to nobody. He starts talking about 38,000 Americans died building the Panama Canal. The number is like 380, and we're not even on the same page. They lost a bunch of people there, but they were all people from Jamaica, which he doesn't care about. They weren't. There's like 380 American actual Americans that died. 38,000 to three. I mean, just whatever the number sounds good. I don't see how. And the people I know, just for me, because I try to never lie. For God's sake, I mean, try to. And the idea that somebody lies all the time, but that somehow you could pick out the pieces of what they're lying that you like, and the rest of it's all okay. I just have never had been able to do that. If somebody lies all the time, they lie all the time. You can't believe anything. I mean, if they say it's daylight out, you got to check.
So again, I hear you, and he gets things factually wrong, regularly. And they all tend to work in his favor. I get that. From the very first, the how many people attended his inauguration on the mall in 2016, But again, on the stuff that matters or that seems to matter, when he says we're going to do this or we want to do that, he seems to follow through. So I'm less concerned. I don't like it, but I'm less concerned about the kind of quasi-historical distortions that slip out than I am about we're going to do this or we're going to do that. And he's as I said, he's like my many of my worst clients. He says whatever comes into his head, you know, even though you tell him not to. So I'll be very interested to see what kind of a presentation it is. He is capable of giving disciplined speeches. We know that from the campaign. We'll just have to.
I hope he does tonight, and then hope he does tonight. I'm still hoping for, but I listened to some retired general talking about the whole mess, and he was talking about some of the miscalculations, and he said that the miscalculation was that somehow or another you were going to have this regime change that was going to be better. And now it appears it's either very fractured or it could be worse.
Okay.
He also said that we thought that some kind of strikes like we did, he said, but somehow or another, either from the Chinese or somebody, these guys seem to have as much stuff as when they started. Whether they're getting it from other people, whether it's, I mean, the whole idea that by this time they would be totally, I mean, how many times have we been told that everything, their entire offensive capability has been wrecked? Well, obviously it hasn't been.
I don't know if Trump's spoken on this or not. I have not heard somebody credible say destroyed their offensive capability. We haven't. Nobody would make that comment.
On many occasions, he basically alluded to that. But the point is, now, are we heading toward a World War III here? I mean, are China and Russia going to start backing these idiots?
You and I have had this conversation before about Russian interference and Chinese interference in Vietnam, where we had Russian and Chinese foreign policy goals to basically damage us as much as possible in Vietnam. And so they used the Vietnamese as a proxy and fed them, you know, military equipment, training, in some cases operational stuff. There were Soviets flying the fighters over North Vietnam, and in some cases there definitely were over Korea. My response to that is, hey, you know, tit for tat, too bad.
Well, we did the same thing in Afghanistan when Russia was there, right?
Something like that, yeah. Too bad you're losing people in Ukraine. You know what? This is payback. And I'm, although because of Russian idiocy and the way they've operated, they've lost a lot more people than we did in Vietnam.
Yeah.
But
we care more than they do, I think.
Well, we definitely do. I see that playing out. Are we headed for World War III? World War III is probably going to start. A major World War III is going to start. There's a great series called Flat Circle History right now on YouTube that has a whole scenario on this. But if it starts, it'll probably look something like maybe a Chinese move on Taiwan, Communist China move on Taiwan that we have to respond to, followed by, you know, the Russians going into the Baltics or going after going through Belarus into Poland.
My whole criticism on this, Luigi, I really thought that combination of Trump and even Biden and maybe guys before then, I really thought that in the last year or two, we had brought those guys to their knees enough to where they weren't going to bother anybody for a while. I mean, Hamas was
their knees.
Hamas was pretty much bashed up. The Houthis were bashed up. Who are the guys in Lebanon? They were barely bashed up.
Hezbollah.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought we had them to a point where we could, you know, hope the guy died and they had a good regime change. I really thought we had them to that point. I'm kind of surprised that we did this when we did. I mean, I actually thought we were, you and I have talked, and the world is obviously knows the history. There's been all kinds of people that Russia, we dealt with for how many years and outspent them, and then all of a sudden they. Well, we thought they blew themselves up, but it turns out they came back. We've been pretty good at this maintaining, and I really thought that we had done a really pretty nice job with these guys over the last 4 to 6 years. And I was really kind of surprised that we had to pull the trigger when we did, or we did when we did. I mean, that's my rationale on the thing. You're never going to get me to say they're good people. I mean, obviously not.
I think the thought process was, and you can see this. You see this play out in the way these stripes are coming through now. you know, this is a regime that was not backing down, despite what was happening to it to its proxies, that was not backing down, that was not going to stop trying to destabilize the area, that was working very hard to get a nuclear weapon, which, you know, in the hands of a theocratic doomsday cult, is a legitimate threat for use, and you know, that had never, ever stopped saying, "Death to America, death to Israel," and so they continued to do their thing, and so we said, you know what, we're not going to tolerate the rise of a nuclear armed state that has expressed over and over again its enmity to the United States and the West, that continues to operate terror and piracy cells throughout the region, that has made credible attempts to assassinate the President of the United States, and has conducted assassinations in our territory and in Europe. We're not going to put up with it anymore. And so this president and his administration took advantage of Israel basically heavily damaging the two Iranian proxy destabilizing forces in the Middle East, knocking out Assad so that they can't ship their stuff over land to Hezbollah, you know, de-digitizing several thousand of Hezbollah's fighters and main leadership, effectively destroying Gaza or Hamas as a military threat. And we said, you know what, this will be an opportunity.
Well,
and
the Israelis
demonstrated that whatever Iranian air defense was, it wasn't effective, and not against our stuff. And so we said, okay, we can strike the nuclear facilities. We're going to do that, and let's see if they get the word.
Well, I'm never going to be.
Iran got the memo and tore it up. Okay.
I'm never going to be on the side of Hamas or Hezbollah. But this general was talking about, and again, he's not. And it's, he was saying, you know, you have to, somewhere along the line, you have to put yourself in the mind of your opponent just so you can negotiate with him. I mean, for God's sake, Don Corleone said that. He goes, we don't seem to understand what. Because you can say that the Hamas people are bad people, but from the other side, from their side, every single time somebody does something, and there's a lot of people who hate Israel. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Every time they do something, it ends up being, from the other side, this big land grab. Really, since 1947.
So the short answer to that is, I don't care.
Okay, I'm not saying
I don't care. Their worldview is, as I said, is that of a theocratic death cult.
Well, you're not going to get me to defend those guys.
No. But I mean, but you're saying.
I'm just saying you have to look
mindset.
At the other. I don't have to agree with the other guy's point of view.
No,
you just got to understand it, is all I'm saying.
I think they have told us over and over again what their mindset is.
We know
what their mindset
is. Right, but
but
a lot of this tension, I really do believe, is some. I don't think that Israel needs to take over Lebanon.
The only reason that Israel tried not occupying Lebanon, it didn't work. So the move now is to put a buffer in place until the Lebanese government, if at all, gets strong enough to defend its own territory and stops being a puppet of Iranian proxies.
What I'm saying is, I heard an Israeli general 3 weeks ago say we're never giving him the buffer back.
So, well, that's his opinion about what they may need to do. I mean,
I think somehow it's such a confused situation, Lou. I'm not about to say Hamas had any business doing what they did to Israel on that one day, but I also know that somehow or another, with the stock market moves and other things like that, there's something fishy there, and I don't know what it is. I'm not going to accuse the Israelis of knowing it was going to happen and just were upset with it, how it was so bad. Something was sort of fishy. Nothing you can prosecute. Nothing. It's like the planes here. Everybody buying puts in United Airlines the week before the planes hit the World Trade Center. Somebody seems to know, and a lot of it has my confusion here, and it is confusion. By the way, that's why I'm trying to get answers out of guys like you that know more about a lot of stuff than I do. I tie all this stuff together, or try to, on the show. And what I've learned from Andrew and Wayne so much on the with this Epstein thing, and you say, okay, what the hell is the connection between Epstein and the war in the Middle East? Probably nothing, except for the fact that there does seem to be, and you brought up one of your best days ever. I mean, you've had a whole bunch of them on the show. You brought up the whole routine about the Russian railroads and them not, because of the embargoes and stuff, not being able to get roller bearings for the railroads, and how the railroads all falling apart. Well, guess what, Lou? That was 3-4 years ago. Somehow, they got all this shit. How'd they get it? I mean, somehow there's people on our end that seem to be known to this administration and others that whatever we say we're doing, somehow work around it and get money over there and do some stuff, and those people are here.
It's not just this administration. I mean, this has been going on.
It's been going on since Epstein was a pup. I mean, and he learned from what's-her-name's Maxwell's dad. But can't we ever stop this shit? If we did, maybe a lot of these wars wouldn't even be needed, for God's sake.
Arguably, that's what our sanctions are supposed to be doing, but the Ukrainians are you know, showing us captured stuff from Russia that is made with Western parts, West German, Swiss, there's always, Italian,
whatever. When you see the guy who's our commerce secretary, that took his family down to, Epstein's Island. Well, I don't think that while his wife and kids are having lunch, he said he's going to their men's room and took some 16-year-old I don't think he did that. I think he was there because in his business, which is they do a lot of international, you know, currency transactions and stuff, people are asking him how do I get money to the Russians? Or how do I get money out of Russia because I want to sell them. I think he had to go to Epstein and say, how the hell do I do this? From Cantor Fitzgerald. I mean, I think that there's people that can get this stuff done, and there's no way you and I would go have lunch with a confirmed convicted pedophile, unless, you know, I hope neither one of us would do this. If I had some massive client somewhere and said, I got to get money to Russia, how do I get it there? And I know Epstein's the guy that can get it there. I mean, that's a totally different level. I think of all the problems with Epstein, it's 20-40% messing around with people, girls and boys that were young, which is friggin' horrible. But I think at the end of the day, it's probably 60% the other stuff that nobody's even looking at.
I think it's a much higher percentage than that, and that's why you saw the VPs from places like, I think it was Morgan Stanley, and the general counsel, Obama's former general counsel, who continued her association with this guy. I mean, the guys are bad enough. It's the women that continued the association that I was going, what? But it's business.
But it's money. One of you got a huge client, says, if you can't get my roller bearings into Russia and then somehow me get paid for it, I'm going to go find somebody else.
I doubt if it was that straightforward. What I suspect was, I have a company in Germany that wants to buy your stuff. Okay, great. That company then sells to another company, which sells to a third company, which then has the contacts that moves the stuff in there. I mean, I think that's how it.
I think it probably does too. But we never seem to be able to nip that, and maybe we don't want to. Maybe they're too powerful.
I have no idea. I do know that Western tech is getting into Russia. We know that.
And I bet it's getting into Iran. Who?
It's coming in. Well, the Iranians have a reasonably competent tech sector themselves, but the stuff that we're seeing coming out of Ukraine is clearly Western. I have exhausted my time. I see Andrew and Wayne are in the wings, so
hey, stay away from the bad air, will you? Don't
yeah. Put a mask on. All
well,
right.
If you're, I would say don't do your jogging in Chicago this morning.
No. You guys stay safe. Okay?
All right, buddy.
We'll talk to you.
Yep.
Bye.
Andrew, Wayne, how are you guys?
I am fine, and we're smoke-free down here in Florida.
You can barely, I mean, I look at maybe 3 blocks away is the old post office. It looks like it's a fog, but it's not. It's smoke.
Yeah. I remember the last time we had these fires few years ago, I was driving to Canada on a vacation, and I could not see Washington, D.C. I couldn't see Baltimore. I couldn't see Philly. I couldn't see New York. I only saw buildings when I got to Boston.
Well, the Boston is like the worst today. They claim the whole sky is orange or something.
Yeah, and it's these fires are coming out of Western Ontario and Manitoba. So, another sign of the times with these horrendous fires.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. So, what have you guys been up to? Did you were you in court where they played the tapes of the reflecting pool and how the guy sabotaged it, and then they found out in court that the tapes were before he even got there?
I wanted to be the courthouse is just a couple blocks from my office, but there's so much going on that sometimes you have to apply a priority list, and how important is it to be actually in court as opposed to reading about it and doing something else. But it's important, but there's a lot of important things going on.
What is going to be the justification for approving the home builder as the head of national security when the guy has a security clearance of me, for God's sake?
Well, he's a proven expert hitman, and he will do what he's told and go beyond it with the zealotry that you would want in your in a pit bull trained to attack. So that's the qualification.
How what happens when there's a leak in the dike? I got to believe that if all of a sudden this, if there is an election, they all lose, and this guy, all of a sudden, you don't want to be on his coattails anymore. And I've seen that happen in American politics. I'm not into it as much as you guys, but all of a sudden, if you're out, boy, you're out.
Well, we're actually seeing that right now in Hungary, where Orbán, you know, the Trump's buddy over there, the neo-fascist, was trouncing the election. He won a veto-proof majority in parliament, and he just got around yesterday or day before. Orbán had appointed one of his flunkies as president, which the president doesn't have a whole lot of power, but has enough to cause problems. And they tossed him out of the presidency. So I think, if we're lucky enough to see a blue wave in this country, I would suspect there's going to be a lot of these lickspittles for Trump that are going to start sounding like civil libertarians all of a sudden, you know. Oh, it was never my idea, and, you know, I was just following orders. Well, I think we're going to see a lot of just following orders. I think we've got to impose the Nuremberg standard to that. You were following orders and you knew better, and you still did it, and you're still going to be indicted.
Well, why can't you would think out of all this? I actually listened to somebody the other day, on YouTube, they're all over the place, but this guy is a lifelong moderate Republican. He goes, I want my party back. Why have, you know, at this stage of my life, I would say that whoever I would really want to vote for would be, you know, when you get the extreme ends, I don't really care if he's 10% on the conservative side or 10% on the liberal side. I just don't want either one of these ends. Am I alone, or the Democrats have been pretty successful at doing is constantly giving these guys an alternative that looks so bad that nobody wants to go there. The alternative is, you know, AOC and the communist group or social self-called socialists in New York And the Republicans are very good at saying, is that what you want rather than this? I mean, most people, a lot of people probably say no. Why isn't anybody in the middle in either party able to? There's a couple of men in the Senate, like you said last week, Wayne, but they're older. The one guy who seems to be doing the smartest stuff for the Democrat, I really like him, but what is he, 70 something? I mean, why there doesn't seem to be anybody around that I would ever support? I'm not going to support AOC. I'm not going to support Trump. But I mean, for God's sake, can't we find somebody who has a lick of common sense and morals in the middle?
Well, actually, there are such people, and I would suggest that most of the candidates running are exactly who you're talking about. But what happens is there's a distortion in media and public debate that focuses on a few primary winners, or in some cases elected officials in super urban areas, and the nationwide Democratic Party is painted with these few really aberrations from the party. So for example, to take the New York elections that you're talking about, they call themselves Democratic Socialists. They're actually not anywhere near socialist.
I argue with people all the time, Andrew. I mean, they can't even define socialism. Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, and you actually corrected that a few moments ago. But if you look at who's running in, let's say, Iowa, or the elected governors of New Jersey or Virginia, the big elections, it's an off year, 2025, but the two biggest elections nationally were the elections of in New Jersey and Virginia for governor. And one in Virginia, a career CIA officer and so forth, and she won by 13 points. And New Jersey, also a moderate. And if you look at the candidates around the country now for Senate and so forth, these are after a kind of refocus by the Democratic Party, are people who come out of their environments with biographies of public service and so forth. And what we're seeing that leads to your question or comment, I think, is an intense focus by the billionaire-powered media machine to focus on a few election victories that are the ultra-left. But to go back to Chicago, the mayor there is inevitably far to the left of what...
He's blitheringly incompetent, which is even more weird.
Well, yeah, but that's not the National Democratic Party. He appealed to at least a plurality of the people in Chicago, but that's, I would suggest, an aberration. But of course, it assumes larger importance given where you are, but it's not the whole story by any means.
Well, I you're absolutely correct. There's no doubt about that. But it's all, as you know, I mean, I guess I feel more than you do, I think, and Wayne's maybe more in the middle. Sometimes, you know, if the legend conflicts with the story, print the legend. You know, I mean, the fact is, every
great
time...
quote from Liberty Valance,
yeah.
The man who got Liberty Valance.
Yep. And,
for you people in the audience.
Well, and, you know, I guess... in a minute, I'm going to ask you, okay, who would be the moderate more intellectual Republicans that this fellow was looking for. But I mean, I really believe, and I don't, whatever. I think you could probably win the argument, but you're not going to totally win it. Every time a Brandon Johnson opens his mouth, every time I get an email from AOC with some lunatic stuff in there, it does nothing but strengthen this guy. Because the alternative for a lot of people is, if I don't like Trump, I'm going to get Brandon Johnson. I mean,
they're not the alternative.
I you and I know that. I'm saying, but perception is 90% of the world, right?
But part of the reason we do things like, remember the quote from the movie and talk about this, is in our own small ways to fight back against erroneous perceptions.
I agree.
And it's commanding the waves to stop, but you do it 5 days a week on the show and probably no doubt elsewhere. We don't want to go along with foolishness, and so we try to do our part by having conversations like this.
I'm going to say, Andrew, that I'm not a massive fan of Pritzker, although I will say this. He's way better than he was when he got in office. I mean, I think he's learned a lot, and he's done a lot of stuff monetarily for the state. But I'm going to say that even if he was, in our mind, the perfect candidate, which I don't think he is, I don't think he can move forward with this albatross of Chicago and Johnson in his state.
Well, it may be. And that's why it's, in my view, totally premature to even be thinking about 2028 candidates. There's a serious issue, and we'll know more tonight in the reaction to the speech, about whether we're going to have elections that are in any sense legitimate in the future. And that's why I mean, in the small way, why I'm not down at the courthouse watching stuff that's interesting but is going to be forgotten in 5 months. The big issue is, are we going to be allowed to have elections that are not Soviet-style, Nazi Germany-type elections? And so, yeah, maybe you're right about Pritzker. He's got baggage, but that's down the road.
I agree. I've asked a couple of the local attorneys here, you know, married guys, and my buddy Bill, I was out last night, I asked him, I said, suppose, and they travel, so his wife's got a passport. So my question is, Bill, you've been married, 35 years. I'm going to guess that Beth, his wife's name, that her birth certificate still has her maiden name on there. And he goes, well, yeah. And I said, okay, if she didn't have a passport, if she were to take, this is my question, if she were to take the birth certificate and her marriage certificate, do those two together equal proof of citizenship? I think the answer should be yes, but I don't know.
Well, and that's the problem with these forthcoming elections. Especially if they Trump orders ICE thugs to be present at the polling stations, and then on top of that, you've got Republican Trump activists questioning people's registrations. That's a dangerous combination. And I'm looking at the speech tonight in with the Trump doing the worst possible thing he could do, and he's done a lot of bad things. But the idea that he's putting forth that the two senators from Georgia, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, are illegitimate. This is exactly what Hitler did with the Reichstag. He said, if you're a socialist or a communist, you won't be seated in the Reichstag. Then he pushed through the bill that abolished the Reichstag. And I don't think it's
what was that called? Was that the Enabling Act? Was that the name of it?
Yeah, the Enabling Act.
Yeah.
And the other thing is he picks Georgia, and he's saying an African American and a Jewish senator are illegitimate. Gee, you know, he's showing his white robes in that case, I think.
Well,
and
but my question is, I mean, I listened to Dick Durbin a while ago when he's talking about this bill, Save America Act, and he goes, okay, only 40% of the people have a passport, and I don't even remember. I've had one for so long. What do you have to show to get a passport, just by the by? Do you have to show a birth? I don't know if I did.
You have to show a birth certificate issued by whatever the state. It's either the Department of Health, the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and you can't. Used to be the hospital. I've got one that was issued by the hospital. I've got the other one too, but the hospital issued ones don't count. And those, you know, they actually have the baby footprint and
yeah,
handprint
yeah,
on them.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, that they're not considered legal for.
All right, so I would have had to have brought one when I got my first passport. It's been so long, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So if 40% of the people have passports, now they're good, okay. But now the biggest thing after that, now the other 60%, if you were born in Seattle and you're living in Atlanta, you got to somehow get your ass back to Seattle to get the birth certificate, right? If you don't have one,
yeah.
Because you go to the county building here and get one. It's easy enough to do. But if it's a maiden name thing, does the marriage certificate jump the fact that the name on there is not your name today? I mean, it should, but does it? I guess is my question. Nobody seems to know the answer to that.
Yeah, and
let me pop in here to frame a little bit what I think what Wayne and I are talking about, but just a couple words. Guns, mass,
yeah,
data centers, and partisan enforcement. So if we go to where the rubber meets the road in this upcoming election, the goons that Wayne mentioned before are getting their training through ICE raids. So they're masked people. They have something on their clothing that says police or ICE or something like that. But they're wearing masks, so you don't know who they are. They're carrying guns. And they're at the polling places, and they're disallowing voters. And if you're either a voter or some little old lady who's volunteered, as usual, to help in elections, what are you going to do with these hulking masked guys with guns who are ordering people disallowed? And if you think that there's some enforcement power that's going to ride to your rescue before the votes are counted, forget it. Who?
All it takes
is to have one of them shoot somebody at a polling place and some sort of staged event like we've seen elsewhere. What, all those people waiting in line to vote, you think they're going to stay in that line to vote?
Well,
or are they going to be
running? Obviously, the pushback against that would be everybody to show up, you know, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
No, it's very hard. And here's the last part. You're, as a good law-abiding person trying to imagine how you'd comply with the law, and that's what you were talking about two or three minutes ago, and that's probably what a lot of the listeners are thinking. Well, how would I find that certificate? Where's my birth certificate or passport? The point is that this is not enforced except in certain neighborhoods.
I would agree, yeah.
Certain people, and this is where you not only get a rough the people doing this are not only saying, okay, this is the part of the South Side that we enforce it in, And then they come equipped with a list of names through the federal databases that they have, and that's what Trump is pushing for, is for him and his federal apparatus to have the names and identifying information, including past voting information, social security information, IRS information, so that they can go to, let's say, an African-American neighborhood on the South Side and not only look at skin color, but know who they're looking for, to pull aside from the line and say, well, we've got a complaint about you, you're not registered, you can't vote, but allow some other people who, you know, are in the same situation, well, you can vote, go ahead.
When we have these people, and a lot of them are, I don't see the ads anymore here, where, you know, you're going to give you a $40,000 bonus to leave the Chicago police and join a place where you can really arrest people. We actually had ads like that here. Let's say someday, you know, either God takes him or he loses an election, Trump's gone. How does somebody, either the next Republican president or who are these people that want this job? They want a mask, they want a gun, they want to go basically harass people. Are you going to be like De Gaulle when he disbanded the French Foreign Legion? All he did was try and kill him for the next 10 years?
Well, they're not running for president. They're very happy to be goons and get $100,000 sign-up bonuses so that they can take their guns and masks.
But is anybody, are they coming up? Do we have any? I mean, there's a book that actually Lou read, and he sent me the title twice. We had to do with where did the Gestapo and all those people come from in Germany? And the lion's share of them came from police forces, with the idea that you can arrest people here without worrying about it, type of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And remember, these were police forces during the Depression.
Yeah.
And so you had two things going. You had, well, they were law enforcement, and they tended to not like the communists who were demonstrating around Germany. And also, they were having trouble making ends meet at home because, you know,
yeah,
inflation and, you know, the wheelbarrows full of money. Apparently, that was really a thing.
Well, sure was. and it became very easy for anybody. I mean, if we could go back in time, all of a sudden somebody buzzed us back 20, 25 years, whatever amount of money we could find and get a 30-year loan for anything, be it a bond, be it a mortgage, whatever it is, we'd be all over it. Because if we can borrow less than the rate of inflation, you know, we'd borrow every dime we could find, and we'd buy a baseball team or something. We'd go, why the hell would anybody want a baseball team? Well, because I'm borrowing at 3% or 4%, and the inflation on tickets is going to be 10 or 8. Okay, I mean, that is, and it's so much in everybody's mentality. And I love talking to you guys because you come from a totally different perspective, but it all matches up. I mean, why would somebody be dumb enough to pay, you know, $9 billion for Seattle or something, the football team? Or that, you know, they sell a little piece of the place, and then they do the multiplication, Andrew, and they go, okay, well, that makes the thing worth $9 billion. All right, but it doesn't really, because $9 billion is a much bigger number, right? I mean, you could buy a hundredth of 1% of the thing for whatever that equals out to that. That doesn't mean you can get a loan for $9 billion. But why would somebody do that? You have to ask yourself. I mean, we've got a new secretary or a new Fed chair, and all the guy's done is talking about he's fighting inflation. Well, first of all, it's total bullshit. Because, I mean, I think we know if you're going to fight inflation, you do three things today, none of which would be popular, okay? And then the market wouldn't like it at all, but that's what you would have to do. He has no more intention of doing that than me being a jockey in a seventh race today. I mean, you wouldn't want to beat a horse, right? It's all bullshit. And you wonder how far we can sort of go with this without it becoming, you know, so. And it's not just us. I got the yesterday, there was a headline or 2 days ago, India came out with a horrible inflation number of 4.5%, right? I look at their money supply. It's up 13% in the last like year. There's no way that inflation is 4% if the money supply is up 13. Who's kidding who? Is this a worldwide thing now? You just lie to people all the time? Or what is the deal with that?
Well, it's funny. In India, they've got a very far-right government there, Narendra Modi. And, he's friendly with Trump. And
Sort of.
Yeah, he's his own. He does his own thing. It's all for his own purposes. But he represents a Hindu nationalist government. And
what does that even mean? What does that mean? A Hindu national?
He has put on a pedestal a guy named Bose from World War II. He was wanted India to have independence from Britain. Unlike Mahatma Gandhi, who hitched his wagon with the Allies, Bose hitched his with Hitler, Mussolini, and Tojo. And he's never been highly thought of, especially after India gained independence. You know, the civil service was all British trained and therefore very pro-ally during the war. This guy, Modi, comes in. He's building statues to Bose. That would be like, and I don't want to give anybody any ideas, that would be like Trump putting up a statue of George Lincoln Rockwell in Washington, D.C.
Well, I know we got to go to break, but I heard him on some interview a few weeks ago, and he was talking about the oil. And I don't know if he's pro-Trump, whatever he is, but he says, what's with you guys? First of all, he goes, we never bought any Russian oil. Then all of a sudden, you guys started all this stuff, and now we're buying Russian oil, and then you tell us not to. Then, like, 2 months later, you tell us to go buy the Russian oil because we're going to let Russia sell it again to stabilize world oil prices. He goes, make up your mind. I'm sitting there listening to this, and I don't know if he's right or wrong or what his agenda is. But he goes, in like 4 months' time, first we couldn't do it. We never did it. And then all of a sudden we couldn't do it. And then now you want us to do it.
Yeah.
You know, anyway.
Hey, before break, let me just remind people that George Lincoln Rockwell was head of the American Nazi Party.
Yeah.
But died 50 years ago. And Wayne has developed information that he was play acting and that it was kind of a game for him. He came from a theatrical family. His parents were close friends of the Jewish Marx Brothers, and that he was being subsidized in a kind of complicated propaganda game to be head of the American Nazi Party.
Was he the guy who did that thing in Madison Square Garden where he beat up the Jewish guy?
No, that was back in 1939. That was the German-American Bund. And that's another thing. That's a story I'm working on right now that possibly Fred Trump, Donald Trump's father, was not only a member of the Bund, but he was present at the Garden that night.
Oh, God. SP Futures down 28 and NASDAQ Futures down 282. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your bank's, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
We're back.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom, Jim Lola on the board. SP Futures down 25, Nasdaq Futures actually down 30, Nasdaq Futures down 306. Dow Futures are actually up, and that's mostly because of United Healthcare is up $29. They blew out earnings, and they said that their expense reduction program is on schedule. They're down, or up that much. Caterpillar is down 24, which is bizarre. Goldman Sachs, which was up a bunch yesterday, is down 5. IBM is still down again today. I mean, that's a major hit, and I have to ask Wayne and Andrew if they think that's a canary in the coal mine or that's a one-off here. Micron, the other one, is flying up and down every day. Is down $45. That's 5%. And by the way, it's got our little warning on my machine is you can't short that one without having big problems. They got to locate first. Maybe we'll talk about that for a second. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 1,900. It's 2.8%. That's a lot. Hang Seng up 327, 1.3%. Shanghai down 73, 1.8%. And Russell tried to explain yesterday why the Hang Seng and the Shanghai are going in different directions damn near every day, but I've never seen that before. The DAX down 235, that's 1%. FTSE down 35.3%. CAC around down 83, that's a full 1%. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.58 on the 10-year, and I've got the 30-year, ouch, 5.12. That's as high as we've seen there in a real long time. That's up a whole almost 1% on those things. That's careful on the mortgages, careful on everything here. And that's a problem. Oil up 71 cents, over $80, 80.31. That's not good. RBOB up 5 cents, 3.34. It was under 3 a few weeks ago. The new hostilities in Iran, I just hope that this is over quick. I don't know if it's going to be. Gold down $25. Gold can't get out of its own way. I think we're seeing Japan in places selling gold because they've got it because of their foreign exchange, which we're going to talk about here in a second. Foreign exchange. Japan is at 162.20, and it's 2 points above their panic mark is 160. U.S. dollar kind of the same in the euro, 114.5, and against the pound, 135. So that may be down a little bit against the pound. Crypto down 761, 64,123. That's Bitcoin. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. And by the way, what an interesting game in Argentina yesterday.
Yeah, yes, it was. Argentina, again, pulled it off in the second half of the match. Going to traffic on the inbound Kennedy, we are at 22 minutes. The inbound Edens, we're at 36. The inbound Eisenhower, 32. And the inbound Dan Ryan. Now, weather, as you had hinted earlier today, Chief, we do have an advisory because of the Canadian wildfires. We do have pollution coming in from the smoke to reduce air quality. We're going to have a high of 86 tonight, thunderstorms. And in Phoenix, they have a flood watch. Right now, it's 89 degrees with a high of 101. Basically, that's all that we have, Chief. Back to you.
Guys, with this all this smoke, if we ever got any rain, you know what popped into my feeble brain? What the hell is my truck going to look like if all this smoke and particulate lands on my truck with the rain? I won't be able to see out the window, for God's sake. Just saying.
You're going to wash your truck. Washing the lungs is a little...
Yeah, today you almost don't really want to breathe. Remember when we were younger... We haven't heard one of these in a long time, but I was working at Pullman in Hammond, and I used to go to the YMCA there, and sometimes we'd play basketball or handball or something. My brother came down, but if I didn't, I'd go running in this park down the ways. And there were some days with the there'd be an ozone alert, and I was so dumb in those days. I'd go running, and I'd get back to the Y, and I'd go, I'm not so sure I helped myself or hurt myself. I mean, it was, remember those ozone days, how the air was so damn heavy, and well, at least we haven't had that in a while. That was all fluorocarbons or something? What caused that? I don't know. But,
I happened to listen to Lou in the last segment talking about the physical fitness in the military, and I remember when I was training down in Corpus Christi, Texas, in July, having to run for 3 miles in Corpus Christi. It had to be like 99 degrees with 100% humidity there. And I think back on it, you know, I drive for 3 miles and I say, my God, this is forever. And then thinking, I ran that.
Well, it was a younger model of Wayne. What can I tell you?
Yeah, much younger.
Now, plus, you guys didn't get to run. They don't get to run in running shoes, do they, either? I mean, what'd you run in?
Oh, we were allowed to bring our own athletic shoes. I remember I spent what seemed like a fortune on a pair of Adidas back then.
Well,
it shows you're a younger guy, but and I'll test you, Chief. So when you were playing basketball, did you have regular sneakers? What did Chuck Taylor sneakers, or did you have something that added a little bounce to your footwear?
Well, by far, Chuck Taylor. Andrew, it was a simpler time. You had two decisions to make: high or low, white or black. It was before they had the colors. Those were your decisions. You'd walk into the store and you'd say, and I go, what do you want? High or low, white or black? Those were your life was simpler. But Chuck Taylor's were so much better than any others. It wasn't even close.
And you had a guy who measured your feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. His name was Al Bundy.
Yeah. Al Bundy. Some of the stuff we talk about, and I mean, and I obviously I'm not on really one end of this or the other. I like being in the middle of it, but I feel somewhat alone there. I just wonder, almost the definitions of what we're talking about. I listen to Trump talk. Okay, everything is about him, and I get a email twice a day from AOC. I could swear that Trump wrote the damn thing. An amazing miracle she won. Nobody could possibly have done it except her. I'm like, what are your plans? What are your ideas? What do you want to change? What are you seeing here? I've not heard any thought there worth reading yet out of either one of them. And I listened to Brendan Johnson. How did this guy get the job?
There's a good chance she didn't write those solicitations. But as a matter of fact, I'm getting inundated right now, and I'm also getting it from the what sounds like collection notices from Trump. You know, we haven't heard from you, and
yeah.
What are they going to do? He's going to take away my Social Security.
Yeah, we got to look at these fundraising operations. And two very quick stories. There's a big, tall Capitol policeman, former Capitol policeman, kind of a hero fighting against the insurrection, Harry Dunn. And I've run into him a couple times. Actually, one time I was with Wayne. And I said, well, you're running for Congress. Sorry, I didn't respond. I'm a reporter. Don't really do that. And he said, that's all right. A consultant writes those, so I don't write that stuff. But more relevantly, to the extent people care about the huge implications of what happened in Maine, with the Democratic nominee dropping out after a sex scandal.
Oh, thank you for reminding me, Andrew. I want to make sure I asked you about that today. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, there's new stuff about that, and it calls for both internally in the Democratic apparatus to look at what they've been doing, but also in the general public to pay some attention, because the ostensible lessons are that most of the public think they know are, in my view, totally wrong if you dig down deeper and realize that this guy was not popular. He was not authentic. He was recruited by these consultants, and the consultants are really to blame, not the Democratic Party. And
he worked for Blackwater after he got out of the Marines.
Yeah, and there's a Chicago Tribune story from 2020 that Wayne sent me, that the head of Blackwater was talking about recruiting infiltrators into the Democratic Party, unions, and liberal groups to get jobs and then disrupt them.
Well, our friend Kevin, we were talking about this guy in Maine, and he, and by the way, I think he was very articulate when he talked about a lot of the stuff that forced the guy out was there all along, and the party just kind of waited for the right time to let it all pop. Is it? And I'm not so sure. I don't think he's wrong on that.
No, yeah, you're right. Actually, the party, the National Party, is pretty weak, and it doesn't have the power to affect devious propaganda operations in the localities. And so the most they did, the National Party, was they recruited the governor to try to run in the race, but she was 79. She didn't really want to do it. She didn't have the fire in the belly. And so she was overwhelmed by this guy who was actually recruited by some devious consultants who work.
When you say consultants, are you talking about Arthur Anderson? Or I mean those kinds of consultants, or what kind?
Political consultants. There's a mysterious guy, Morris Katz is his name. And by the way, some of these people have been active in the Michigan Senate race. That's still going on with the primary early next month. What they did was they had a talent hunt for a guy who would look like a working man and who was articulate and a good voice, frustrations, and that was Graham Plattner.
Isn't it sort of like the guy in Pennsylvania that had the stroke? Wasn't that his sort of deal, too?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, same thing, Fetterman, right.
And with a potentially similar result, because Fetterman, whether it's from his illness or whether this is all part of the plan, he's become, in effect, a Trump-supporting Democrat after campaigning as a big ultra-progressive. And with Plattner, people knew about his problems at least 10 months ago, and it was covered up, and various people, including his wing of the party, these consultants and the ultra-left, and here we're talking about Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna, the California congressman, for two names, they said, well, he's an oyster farmer. Well, his main customer is his mother. and so a lot of this is a kind of manufactured resume. And here's something that just came out yesterday that's a little bit of news here, is that apparently his campaign was broke in mid-June, and he and his people didn't talk about it. And so he would have had absolutely no money to fight in the general election, and in a state that went for Harris by 7 points in 2024, the Democratic candidate would have had no money to go up against her treasure chest that an incumbent like her would have. And that shows duplicity on the candidate.
It also shows the Democratic Party is kind of wobbling.
Well, yeah, but again, which part of the Democratic Party? Because you can't blame that on Schumer. It goes to who orchestrated his recruitment when he had a past as an accused rapist and a more or less phony resume that was then foisted on the Democratic primary voters.
And the guy who is sort of the key individual that these people rally around is a guy who's never been a member of the Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders. He's not registered as he's registered as an independent socialist, or I mean at least have somebody who's paid dues.
You gotta send that guy a calculator someday, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Well, and so the point is, what happens, and whether wittingly or not, Bernie Sanders and Ralph Nader operate as chaos agents who, against the Democratic Party. And there are parallels going back to Hitler's rise in Germany. And if you look at this Michigan race, the ultra-left candidate, Dr. Al-Sayed, his view is to reform the Democratic Party and make it ultra-left, whereas he's running against Haley Stevens, whose goal is to help people in the country, change the national direction. And
this is in the Democratic primary?
Yeah.
The Democratic primary. And so the problem, and they're running fairly close to one another, but the problem is, once you get past the Democratic primary politics, somebody whose main mission is changing the Democratic Party to the left, they're going to get clobbered in the general election.
We're going to pick up more on this next week, because I want to ask you guys about this Musk indictment in Wisconsin, if that does anything.
Was he indicted or just referred for indictment?
Well, he was. I think he might have been referred for indictment.
Yeah.
But in my view, and I worked for a lady who was running for treasurer here in the state. We wrote this thing up. Long story, I've told a million times. But the weird part there was, she was pretty good at getting money, all right? And at the end of the day, this is when the Democrats got totally swept out. They thought she had a comfortable enough lead that she didn't campaign the last week, and they asked her for her money for the people who were going to get their ass kicked. And it strikes me that this is, I've read this a bunch of times, but it's my perception is that people will actually give money to the Republican Party, because, well, maybe until, who knows, I guess the party had stuff it sort of stood for. Now, whether it does anymore or not, we can debate forever, but had stuff that, was lower taxes, this and that, and people would give money to the party. But the Democratic Party, not a whole lot of people ever sent a check to the Democratic Party.
Well, exactly. Here's some statistics. Your statistics, man. When I saw some statistics last week, the Democratic Party, National Party, is $3 million in debt. The Republican Party has over $100 million in the bank accounts. And it illustrates exactly what you're talking about. And part of the reason, and maybe Wayne has done some new research that he might pop up with, but part of the reason is you have these ultra-left people, the Bernie Sanders wing, and they say, don't support the Democratic Party. Look what they did to Bernie Sanders in 2016. Support some fringe causes. And Wayne's research is what happened in Florida when Bernie Sanders stuck his nose into...
Yeah, we had a very corrupt mayor, Democratic mayor in Tallahassee, Andrew Gillum, and all the people around him were being indicted for all kinds of things. His campaign donors were being indicted. Bernie Sanders comes in and says, oh, he's our guy. You have to... So he runs in this, four-way primary, and wins against the daughter of a very popular former senator and governor here, somebody I knew, Bob Graham. She loses to this Gillum. Gillum got the party rallying around him. He came pretty close to and for Florida to beating DeSantis, but ultimately failed. And then it wasn't long after he was caught in a motel in South Beach, Miami, with a gay porn star and crystal meth and all kinds of drugs in the room.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it. But I guess what you're talking about, Andrew, I think it shows in that the Republican Party has much better software, much better, I won't say tracking in the bad word, but they're just more organized. I mean, they have their computer systems are better because they've got more dough. And when people run for the Democratic stuff, it's about the money that they can make, and the party tries to get it from them. It's a totally different operation, and it befuddles me that it's like that.
Well, it's changing, and I think, and I try to monitor this stuff, a lot of people in the Democratic Party, and it's not everywhere, but are saying, look, we've got to get good candidates that are attuned to the local environment, and if it's South Carolina, you get a different person than in Chicago, and we got to win this midterm. And here's one complaint, though, is arising yesterday. People said, okay, we've gotten these Democratic senators to ask tough questions, like in the hearings yesterday with the two nominees of Trump, but not one of them said the most important thing, which is not just embarrass them with questions about their, you know, law breaking or ethical violations. What was left out is not one said, do you realize that you're going to be held accountable personally for any law breaking you do, and you better get your pardon in advance? Do you realize that? Nobody went the extra step to say there should be accountability if there's law breaking, not just, do you promise not to law break?
We only got a few minutes, but if we ever in our lifetime get somebody from either party, I don't care where, that is a real serious. Well, I won't say Trump's not serious or Biden weren't serious. They're obviously serious, they're presidents, but somebody would have to review all the antics of the last 25 years, both in terms of declaration of war stuff, investment stuff, pardon stuff. Somebody really needs a review, and I'm going back, you know, Obama and Clinton and everybody on this stuff. Somebody needs to look at these powers and wonder how they've been abused by all these people and say, do we need to make some changes here or what?
Well, you're talking about a Truth and Reconciliation committee. And there are some calls for that.
Well, there are people who do that. They're called historians, journalists, and others, judges. But what we're seeing is a systematic effort to weed out the people seriously doing what you're talking about and diminish their power.
Well, that's natural. I mean, if you were the guy being the no good Nick.
Well, exactly. So that's what the attack on universities, the attacks on law firms, the attacks on journalism institutions is all about, is to take people trying to do exactly what you say and replace them with yes men.
And somehow or another, we're going along with it. But hey, what is the upshot of this thing in Wisconsin? I mean, I don't know if you guys are onto this. I know I'm jumping in with this, but
well, during a Supreme Court pivotal election, where the Republican majority was being threatened by a Democrat, although it's nonpartisan technically, but
now this is you're electing Supreme Court judges in in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and people kind of knew who was the Republican and who was the Democrat, even though, Musk basically created, as only billionaires can do, incentives for people to vote for the Republican. And he funded, and I kind of forget the details, but something like huge giveaways for people who...
It's like a lottery.
Yeah.
Lottery for $1 million each.
And this was clearly designed to affect the election. And basically, this month, people looking into that in the kind of retrospective that you were just advocating said this violates election laws. You're not allowed to try to bribe people.
It was essentially given up, would end up being like $1,000 a person, didn't it? Some huge number.
Yeah, and even though he changed it, probably based on legal advice, they said, well, he announced what his plan was, and even though he adjusted it later, everybody knows that you could get in on money if you went along with what his scheme was. And they referred him for prosecution. Now, whether the state authorities decide to proceed, it's a lot harder to actually indict somebody and win at trial than it is for me to talk about it on the radio show. So they may or may not proceed. But the last part about this is those of us who have covered courts or been part of the system know that the tradition in American law is that you're not supposed to indict people unless you have a reasonable hope that you can get a conviction. And by the same token, when I was a newspaper reporter, we were under orders at the Hartford Courant not to take dossiers created by investigators and then smear the citizens with secret dossiers. It's supposed to go through a process. But all of that is out of the window now in many places, including the U.S. Justice Department, because the idea is you smear your political opponents, you indict them, you get the headlines, and you don't even care if they're convicted or even brought to trial, because you're looking for the immediate short-term smear.
Well, if he's guilty, is it a criminal offense?
If it proceeds to an indictment, trial, and conviction and appeal. But the so we've got to look at who's ever in charge of these processes and see, are they operating with basic traditional American integrity, or are they just hit artists with a badge or a...
Well, I wouldn't want to see that happen even to Trump, or what's his name?
Musk.
I mean, that's
well,
not America.
No, but that's why it's going through a procedure, as we just talked about, and we don't know what the result is.
Although I would say that any one of us can probably rattle four or five things off the top of our head regarding his SEC stuff and everything. To where, if you don't think the guy thinks he's above the law, you don't have a vision, for God's sake. I mean, you got blinders on. I mean, these guys all think they're above the law.
Plus, he came here illegally as a student and lied about his status and citizenship.
That's okay, though. He's white. You can do that.
Yeah, right.
So what is the weather out in Washington as bad as it is here?
It seems okay. Of course, I turned down the air conditioner.
What are you guys doing this weekend? Anything good? Yesterday, if it wasn't for soccer, what would your vote be? And Jimmy, you too. What's the deadest day in all of sports? The day after the Super Bowl or the day after the All-Star game?
I would say All-Star game.
Yeah, if it wasn't for soccer yesterday, there was zero. Well, I guess you could watch the women's NBA. I don't know if anybody watches that, but some people probably do. But that soccer game was pretty interesting. You guys, you know anybody who's going to any of these games?
I don't. My dad was a semi-pro soccer player in Denmark.
Really?
I should know more about it, but I never got interested in it. Of course, it's football overseas.
So what was your sport? Andrew, you were rowing, right?
Rowing and boxing.
Really?
But I really loved basketball. The golden moments at the local YMCA during the summer when the pro players would come to the Y and we'd play people like Rick Mahorn, who you may recall from the Detroit Pistons. And what was kind of funny was to see these guys, you know, they're NBA starting players, sit around and if their team lost, they'd have to wait a game or two. Just like everybody else. That's democracy.
Oh, yeah, that was... I the best I ever played with, I played with these guys who were on the Lithuanian national team, and there were three or four ex-college players there. I don't think I ever played with an ex-pro. But those guys are pretty good. A couple of them were... one of the guys was the center at... where did Spencer Haywood go? Did he go to Niagara or someplace?
Here, very quick story. We're out of time, but... one time I watched this guy who was about 6'4", slender, about 185, and he was just tearing up the pickup game at the Hartford Y. And I said, "Who is that guy?" And they said, "Oh, that's Jerry Ford, all-time scoring leader at the University of Nebraska. He was just cut by the Celtics." And I thought, "Oh, my God."
Yeah, the guys that are just cut.
Just cut the all-time leader at a major university, and that is a lifelong lesson for me that I'm sharing here, because it's so wonderful, but then it's over.
Well, there was a guy on the Bulls championship team. Jimmy might remember the name of the guy. It's big, you know. He wasn't the white guy at the end of the bench. He was black guy. But he was on the team, off the team, if ever anybody got hurt. And he was almost like a somewhat of a laughing stock. Like, I'll never get in the game. Blah blah blah.
Brad Sellers.
No, it wasn't him. It was some guy who came from the south side of Chicago, this guy. And anyway, the only way he could get into a Park District league was to promise not to shoot. I mean, that's how much different, you know, those guys are than just regular people. It's
Hey, next week we got to go into the Eddie Guidel midget story.
Oh, God.
That Bill Vec did, but we're out of time here.
There used to be a midget bar on the south side.
Well, I'll even slip in the punchline. So Bill Vec, the great owner of the White Sox, gets this midget, and they get him in a crouch into a baseball game. He's got a 4-inch strike zone, and the manager, Paul Richards, during the practice, he took a swing, and Paul Richards, 6'4", World War II Marine, comes out, and he says to the midget in practice, "If you dare take a swing tomorrow, I'm going to kick your midget ass
in the left field." Unreal. SP futures down. We've come back some. SP futures down 22. NASDAQ futures down 268. Thanks, guys. I guess we're all listening to the speech tonight, and we'll talk about it next week. Jimmy, good job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.